227. O ye esteemed ones who are pioneers among the well-wishers of the world of humanity, the letters which ye sent during the war were not received, but a letter dated February the 11th, 1916, has just come to hand, and immediately an answer is being written. Your intention deserves a thousand praises, because you are serving the world of humanity, and this is conducive to the happiness and welfare of all. This recent war has proved to the world and the people that war is destruction, while universal peace is construction. War is death, while peace is life. War is rapacity and bloodthirstiness, while peace is beneficence and humaneness. War is an appurtenance of the world of nature, while peace is of the foundation of the religion of God. War is darkness upon darkness, while peace is heavenly light. War is the destroyer of the edifice of mankind, while peace is the everlasting life of the world of humanity. War is like a devouring wolf, while peace is like the angels of heaven. War is the struggle for existence, while peace is mutual aid and cooperation among the peoples of the world and the cause of the good pleasure of the True One in the heavenly realm. There is not one soul whose conscience does not testify that in this day there is no more important matter in the world than that of universal peace. Every just one bears witness to this and adores that esteemed assembly, because its aim is that this darkness may be changed into light, this bloodthirstiness into kindness, this torment into bliss, this hardship into ease, and this enmity and hatred into fellowship and love. Therefore, the effort of those esteemed souls is worthy of praise and commendation. But the wise souls who are aware of the essential relationships emanating from the realities of things consider that one single matter cannot, by itself, influence the human reality as it ought and should. For until the minds of men become united, no important matter can be accomplished. At present, universal peace is a matter of great importance, but unity of conscience is essential, so that the foundation of this matter may become secure, its establishment firm, and its edifice strong. Therefore, Baha'u'llah, 50 years ago, expounded this question of universal peace at a time when he was confined in the fortress of Akka and was wronged and imprisoned. He wrote about this important matter of universal peace to all the great sovereigns of the world and established it among his friends in the Orient. The horizon of the East was in utter darkness. Nations displayed the utmost hatred and enmity towards each other. Religions thirsted for each other's blood, and it was darkness upon darkness. At such a time, Baha'u'llah shone forth like the sun from the horizon of the East and illumined Persia with the lights of these teachings. Among his teachings was the declaration of universal peace. People of different nations, religions, and sects who followed him came together to such an extent that remarkable gatherings were instituted, consisting of the various nations and religions of the East. Every soul who entered these gatherings saw but one nation, one teaching, one pathway, one order. For the teachings of Baha'u'llah were not limited to the establishment of universal peace. They embraced many teachings which supplemented and supported that of universal peace. Among these teachings was the independent investigation of reality, so that the world of humanity may be saved from the darkness of imitation and attain to the truth, may tear off and cast away this ragged and outgrown garment of 1,000 years ago, and may put on the robe woven in the utmost purity and holiness in the loom of reality. As reality is one and cannot admit of multiplicity, therefore different opinions must ultimately become fused into one. And among the teachings of Baha'u'llah is the oneness of the world of humanity, that all human beings are the sheep of God and He is the kind shepherd. This shepherd is kind to all the sheep because He created them all, trained them, provided for them, and protected them. There is no doubt that the shepherd is kind to all the sheep, and should there be among these sheep ignorant ones, they must be educated. If there be children, they must be trained until they reach maturity. If there be sick ones, they must be cured. There must be no hatred and enmity, for as by a kind physician, these ignorant sick ones should be treated. And among the teachings of Baha'u'llah is that religion must be the cause of fellowship and love. If it becomes the cause of estrangement, then it is not needed, for religion is like a remedy. If it aggravates the disease, then it becomes unnecessary. And among the teachings of Baha'u'llah is that religion must be in conformity with science and reason, so that it may influence the hearts of men. The foundation must be solid and must not consist of imitations. And among the teachings of Baha'u'llah is that religious, racial, political, economic, and patriotic prejudices destroy the edifice of humanity. As long as these prejudices prevail, the world of humanity will not have rest. For a period of 6,000 years, history informs us about the world of humanity. During these 6,000 years, the world of humanity has not been free from war, strife, murder, and bloodthirstiness. In every period, war has been waged in one country or another, and that war was due to either religious prejudice, racial prejudice, political prejudice, or patriotic prejudice. It has therefore been ascertained and proved that all prejudices are destructive of the human edifice. As long as these prejudices persist, the struggle for existence must remain dominant and bloodthirstiness and rapacity continue. Therefore, even as was the case in the past, the world of humanity cannot be saved from the darkness of nature and cannot attain illumination except through the abandonment of prejudices and the acquisition of the morals of the kingdom. If this prejudice and enmity are on account of religion, consider that religion should be the cause of fellowship, otherwise it is fruitless. And if this prejudice be the prejudice of nationality, consider that all mankind are of one nation, all have sprung from the tree of Adam, and Adam is the root of the tree. That tree is one, and all these nations are like branches, while the individuals of humanity are like leaves, blossoms, and fruits thereof. Then the establishment of various nations and the consequent shedding of blood and destruction of the edifice of humanity result from human ignorance and selfish motives. As to the patriotic prejudice, this is also due to absolute ignorance, for the surface of the earth is one native land. Everyone can live in any spot on the terrestrial globe. Therefore, all the world is man's birthplace. These boundaries and outlets have been devised by man. In the creation, such boundaries and outlets were not assigned. Europe is one continent, Asia is one continent, Africa is one continent, Australia is one continent, but some of the souls, from personal motives and selfish interests, have divided each one of these continents and considered a certain part as their own country. God has set up no frontier between France and Germany. They are continuous. Yet in the first centuries, selfish souls, for the promotion of their own interests, have assigned boundaries and outlets, and have day by day attached more importance to these, until this led to intense enmity, bloodshed, and rapacity in subsequent centuries. In the same way, this will continue indefinitely, and if this conception of patriotism remains limited within a certain circle, it will be the primary cause of the world's destruction. No wise and just person will acknowledge these imaginary distinctions. Every limited area which we call our native country, we regard as our motherland, whereas the terrestrial globe is the motherland of all, and not any restricted area. In short, for a few days we live on this earth, and eventually we are buried in it. It is our eternal tomb. Is it worthwhile that we should engage in bloodshed and tear one another to pieces for this eternal tomb? Nay, far from it. Neither is God pleased with such conduct, nor would any sane man approve of it. Consider, the blessed animals engage in no patriotic quarrels. They are in the utmost fellowship with one another and live together in harmony. For example, if a dove from the east and a dove from the west, a dove from the north and a dove from the south chance to arrive at the same time in one spot, they immediately associate in harmony. So it is with all the blessed animals and birds. But the ferocious animals, as soon as they meet, attack and fight with each other, tear each other to pieces, and it is impossible for them to live peaceably together in one spot. They are all unsociable and fierce, savage and combative fighters. Regarding the economic prejudice, it is apparent that whenever the ties between nations become strengthened and the exchange of commodities accelerated, and any economic principle is established in one country, it will ultimately affect the other countries, and universal benefits will result. Then why this prejudice? As to the political prejudice, the policy of God must be followed, and it is indisputable that the policy of God is greater than human policy. We must follow the divine policy, and that applies alike to all individuals. He treats all individuals alike. No distinction is made, and that is the foundation of the divine religions. And among the teachings of Baha'u'llah is the origination of one language that may be spread universally among the people. This teaching was revealed from the pen of Baha'u'llah in order that this universal language may eliminate misunderstandings from among mankind. And among the teachings of Baha'u'llah is the equality of women and men. The world of humanity has two wings. One is women and the other men. Not until both wings are equally developed can the bird fly. Should one wing remain weak, flight is impossible. Not until the world of women becomes equal to the world of men in the acquisition of virtues and perfections, can success and prosperity be attained as they ought to be. And among the teachings of Baha'u'llah is voluntary sharing of one's property with others among mankind. This voluntary sharing is greater than equality and consists in this, that man should not prefer himself to others, but rather should sacrifice his life and property for others. But this should not be introduced by coercion, so that it becomes a law and man is compelled to follow it. Nay, rather, man should voluntarily and of his own choice sacrifice his property and life for others, and spend willingly for the poor, just as is done in Persia among the Baha'is. And among the teachings of Baha'u'llah is man's freedom, that through the ideal power he should be free and emancipated from the captivity of the world of nature. For as long as man is captive to nature, he is a ferocious animal, as the struggle for existence is one of the exigencies of the world of nature. This matter of the struggle for existence is the fountainhead of all calamities and is the supreme affliction. And among the teachings of Baha'u'llah is that religion is a mighty bulwark. If the edifice of religion shakes and totters, commotion and chaos will ensue, and the order of things will be utterly upset. For in the world of mankind, there are two safeguards that protect man from wrongdoing. One is the law which punishes the criminal, but the law prevents only the manifest crime and not the concealed sin, whereas the ideal safeguard, namely the religion of God, prevents both the manifest and the concealed crime, trains man, educates morals, compels the adoption of virtues, and is the all-inclusive power which guarantees the felicity of the world of mankind. But by religion is meant that which is ascertained by investigation, and not that which is based on mere imitation. The foundations of divine religions are not human imitations. And among the teachings of Baha'u'llah is that although material civilization is one of the means for the progress of the world of mankind, yet until it becomes combined with divine civilization, the desired result, which is the felicity of mankind, will not be attained. Consider these battleships that reduce a city to ruins within the space of an hour are the result of material civilization. Likewise, the Krupp guns, the Mauser rifles, dynamite, submarines, torpedo boats, armed aircraft and bombers, all these weapons of war are the malignant fruits of material civilization. Had material civilization been combined with divine civilization, these fiery weapons would never have been invented. Nay, rather, human energy would have been wholly devoted to useful inventions and would have been concentrated on praiseworthy discoveries. Material civilization is like a lamp glass. Divine civilization is the lamp itself, and the glass without the light is dark. Material civilization is like the body. No matter how infinitely graceful, elegant, and beautiful it may be, it is dead. Divine civilization is like the spirit, and the body gets its life from the spirit, otherwise it becomes a corpse. It has thus been made evident that the world of mankind is in need of the breaths of the Holy Spirit. Without the Spirit, the world of mankind is lifeless, and without this light, the world of mankind is in utter darkness. For the world of nature is an animal world. Until man is born again from the world of nature, that is to say, becomes detached from the world of nature, he is essentially an animal, and it is the teachings of God which convert this animal into a human soul. And among the teachings of Baha'u'llah is the promotion of education. Every child must be instructed in sciences as much as is necessary. If the parents are able to provide the expenses of this education, it is well. Otherwise, the community must provide the means for the teaching of that child. And among the teachings of Baha'u'llah are justice and right. Until these are realized on the plane of existence, all things shall be in disorder and remain imperfect. The world of mankind is a world of oppression and cruelty and a realm of aggression and error. In fine, such teachings are numerous. These manifold principles, which constitute the great basis for the felicity of mankind and are of the bounties of the merciful, must be added to the matter of universal peace and combined with it, so that results may accrue. Otherwise, the realization of universal peace by itself in the world of mankind is difficult. As the teachings of Baha'u'llah are combined with universal peace, they are like a table provided with every kind of fresh and delicious food. Every soul can find at that table of infinite bounty that which he desires. If the question is restricted to universal peace alone, the remarkable results which are expected and desired will not be attained. The scope of universal peace must be such that all the communities and religions may find their highest wish realized in it. The teachings of Baha'u'llah are such that all the communities of the world, whether religious, political, or ethical, ancient or modern, find in them the expression of their highest wish. For example, the people of religions find in the teachings of Baha'u'llah the establishment of universal religion, a religion that perfectly conforms with present conditions, which in reality affects the immediate cure of the incurable disease, which relieves every pain and bestows the infallible antidote for every deadly poison. For if we wish to arrange and organize the world of mankind in accordance with the present religious imitations, and thereby to establish the felicity of the world of mankind, it is impossible and impracticable. For example, the enforcement of the laws of the Torah and also of the other religions, in accordance with present imitations. But the essential basis of all the divine religions, which pertains to the virtues of the world of mankind, and is the foundation of the welfare of the world of man, is found in the teachings of Baha'u'llah in the most perfect presentation. Similarly, with regard to the peoples who clamour for freedom, the moderate freedom which guarantees the welfare of the world of mankind and maintains and preserves the universal relationships is found in its fullest power and extension in the teachings of Baha'u'llah. So, with regard to political parties, that which is the greatest policy directing the world of mankind, nay, rather, the divine policy, is found in the teachings of Baha'u'llah. Likewise, with regard to the party of equality, which seeks the solution of the economic problems, until now, all proposed solutions have proved impracticable except the economic proposals in the teachings of Baha'u'llah, which are practicable and cause no distress to society. So with the other parties. When ye look deeply into this matter, ye will discover that the highest aims of those parties are found in the teachings of Baha'u'llah. These teachings constitute the all-inclusive power among all men and are practicable. But there are some teachings of the past, such as those of the Torah, which cannot be carried out at the present day. It is the same with the other religions and the tenets of the various sects and the different parties. For example, the question of universal peace, about which Baha'u'llah says that the Supreme Tribunal must be established. Although the League of Nations has been brought into existence, yet it is incapable of establishing universal peace. But the Supreme Tribunal, which Baha'u'llah has described, will fulfill this sacred task with the utmost might and power. And his plan is this, that the national assemblies of each country and nation, that is to say, parliaments, should elect two or three persons who are the choicest of that nation and are well informed concerning international laws and the relations between governments, and aware of the essential needs of the world of humanity in this day. The number of these representatives should be in proportion to the number of inhabitants of that country. The election of these souls who are chosen by the National Assembly, that is, the Parliament, must be confirmed by the Upper House, the Congress and the Cabinet, and also by the President or Monarch, so these persons may be the elected ones of all the nation and the government. The Supreme Tribunal will be composed of these people, and all mankind will thus have a share therein, for every one of these delegates is fully representative of his nation. When the Supreme Tribunal gives a ruling on any international question, either unanimously or by majority rule, there will no longer be any pretext for the plaintiff or ground of objection for the defendant. In case any of the governments or nations, in the execution of the irrefutable decision of the Supreme Tribunal, be negligent or dilatory, the rest of the nations will rise up against it, because all the governments and nations of the world are the supporters of this Supreme Tribunal. Consider what a firm foundation this is, but by a limited and restricted league, the purpose will not be realized as it ought and should. This is the truth about the situation which has been stated.